It's the Nylon Report with Susan Nylon. You want to talk to Susan? Just call her at 373-1220. That's 373-1220. Here's Susan.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Nylon Report. My name's Susan Nylon in the studio of WSRQ Radio, where I'm here every day, Monday through Friday at 5 o'clock. And this week's sponsor, the Nylon Report, is brought to you by Physical, your physical therapist friends you can lean on. Their state-of-the-art therapy pool features an underwater treadmill that can help you make a painless recovery. Give them a call at 444-1244 and get a free assessment for your pain. We have a good show today. I'm going to be speaking with Sonia Fuentes. She's going to be talking about her receipt of the prestigious Breaking the Glass Ceiling Award and a few other things that she's got going on. In fact, she's an amazing woman. We're going to talk about all the things that she's involved in. I want to let you know, though, before we go to our guests, that Kona and the Sarasota County have come together to provide an exciting event, the 2013 Neighborhood Expo and Workshops. And they want to let you know that the event is on Monday, March 11th from 1 p.m. to 8 p.m. And there'll be over 14 service providers with information for neighborhood condo homeowners and civic organizations. That's at Bee Ridge Community Park, located at 4430 South Lockwood Ridge Road. And I think that's all of my notes today. All right, our guest tonight is a local immigrant, author, feminist, mentor, attorney, and much more. This April, she'll also be the sole representative from Sarasota receiving the Florida Glass Ceiling Award. And I'm with Sonia Fuentes. I'd like to welcome you to our show.
It's a pleasure to be here, Susan.
I'm looking at your resume, and you are a remarkable woman.
Thank you very much.
I want to explore a little bit about that, but before we do, let's talk about the Florida Glass Ceiling Award. Can you explain to our listeners exactly what that is?
Well, I just learned about it this year myself. There is a Jewish Museum of Florida based in Miami Beach, Florida, and that museum annually gives what they call the Glass Ceiling Award to five Jewish professional women in the state of Florida. And this year, I will be one of the five.
And what are the qualifications to receive this award?
The main ones that I know are that someone has to be a Jewish professional woman who has broken the glass ceiling for herself and for other women.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and the glass ceiling does, it's an old term. I think it actually started to be put into use in the 60s, where women essentially felt that no matter how hard they work and how hard they tried, they could only rise to a certain level in not only business, but in society itself, because generally women were looked at having certain roles and nothing above. It usually implied that they weren't able to become a CEO or a high executive officer of a company because their role as women were actually to be subservient to those positions. And so in that respect, I'm looking at your resume and I can't imagine you haven't been honored before in this.
Well, I've been honored in many, many ways, but I've never gotten this particular award.
I meant
award
this one,
before.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. No. Okay, so this award is actually going to happen in April?
That's correct.
And where does it occur?
It takes place at the Jewish Museum, which is on Miami Beach, from 3 to 5 p.m. on the 21st of April.
All right. Okay, what we're going to do right now is we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Sonia Fuentes, and she's going to talk about all the different things and ways that she contributes and the special things that people took notice of with not only this award, with others. So stay tuned with us on the Nylon Report, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Dragonfly inside a jar. Fearful when the sky was full of thunder, and tearful at the falling of a star.
Now I. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to the Nylon Report. My name is Susan Nylon in the studio with Sonia Pressman Fuentes. And she is going to be the recipient of, you know, I'm seeing different names. Is there an exact title for this?
For what?
For the glass ceiling award.
The glass ceiling award.
The glass ceiling award. Okay, I've got it written several different ways in my notes. And you wanted to elaborate a little bit more on what the glass ceiling was.
Well, you mentioned earlier that the glass ceiling would stop women in the 60s and afterwards, and before, of course, from becoming CEOs of companies. But it kicked in at a much lower level than CEO. Mm-hmm. For example, I worked in the federal government as an attorney for 23 years. And the grade ranges that I was familiar with started at 5 and they went to 18. 16, 17, and 18 were super grades. Mm-hmm. Now, when I came into the government, which was 1957, you wouldn't have women probably any or many from grade 14 on. They would probably have been bunched around grades 5, 7, and 9. Mm-hmm. So the time at which you weren't going any further was much below something comparable to CEO of a corporation.
Now, my understanding of government grade, what it also does, it not only does it, it's supposed to indicate the time served, but also it's equated to the pay that you received.
Oh, of course.
And that, I think, is the big difference in not just recognition of authority, but also how much pay that you're getting to a gentleman who's working equivalent to you. Is that correct?
Absolutely right, but much more than pay. Responsibility, opportunity to go to training programs. There were executive training programs in the federal government. And they were limited to people in grades, as I remember, starting at grade 15. And I noticed that, and I realized that because women never got to grade 15, so they never had the opportunity to be trained. And I noticed that, and I complained about it to a woman named Marty Langelin, who was in the Civil Service Commission on Women's Programs. And as a result of that, they had a special program where they took in 10 women for training at the Federal Executive Institute in Charlottesville, Virginia. 10 women who were not meeting those grade levels, but they wanted to start to open it up to women. So I went to that initial program, and now it's much more open to women than it ever was before. It was a 6-week program, but they took 10 women for the first week as something special and to open it up. So not being a higher grade forecloses a lot of things for mm-hmm. you.
For example?
Training.
Training. I had the pleasure of interviewing Lily Ledbetter, and she is mm-hmm. the woman who actually sued to have the right to be able to get promotions equal to the men who were doing the same work that she was.
Not exactly correct.
Okay, go ahead and correct me.
That right is granted by Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which is administered by the mm-hmm. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, where I worked, and it's also guaranteed by the Equal Pay Act. But the way that Title VII had been interpreted was, and she started by filing a charge, a complaint with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, mm-hmm. and then went to court. But the way that act had been interpreted, you could not file a claim until
there was a statute of limitations for that file.
Well, you couldn't file it until you knew you. Oh, I know what it was. The statute of limitations kicked in the minute the discrimination started.
Correct. And her argument was she had no idea
Correct.
For many, many years that she had been discriminated against. And it wasn't until the statute of limitations. Thank you. had expired was she even aware that there was that discrimination. So she no longer had the right to sue the way you're determining.
That is correct.
But she did challenge it, and it did go to the Supreme Court.
Right.
To give her the right, because she felt that it should start the minute she was made aware that she was being discriminated against.
Exactly.
And she
exactly
lost.
Exactly right.
She lost, which is why the Equal Pay Act was put into place that President Obama signed, I think it was like the first piece of legislation he signed when he was taken office in 2009.
No, the Equal Pay Act became effective, was signed in 1963.
But there was an amendment for this.
No.
Okay.
The Equal Pay Act was signed in 1963. It became effective in 1964. The first act that President Obama signed was the Lilly Ledbetter Equal Pay Act to correct this anomaly in the law.
Yes, correct. And essentially it states what the problem was, is that she wasn't made aware of it.
But a lot of people are mistaken, as you were, in thinking that the Lilly Ledbetter Act provides for equal pay and that it does a lot more than it actually does. All it did was correct this problem with the statute of limitation, but it's an important correction.
Correct. Absolutely. And essentially what I'm trying to get to, even though we're taking a really long way around it, the argument was for her is that all those opportunities for promotion, whether it would have been through her job and responsibilities or in addition to the money that she received with it, her main issue was there were over 20 years of missed pay raises that her counterparts received. And when she added up all that money every single year and what it would have amounted to, it would have made a big difference not only in her life, but the lives of her children and her grandchildren.
And the lives of every other woman in the United States.
Well, that's true. Absolutely. And she is not alone in this issue. Even though I will tell you, even today, people will argue this whole idea that women aren't getting paid equally and fairly. And I mean, it's always the men who tend to argue. And I'm not saying all men argue it, but there are men out there who feel that it's a false war, you know, and more propaganda than it is actually a reality for women. How do you feel about that?
It's not a question of how I feel. There are statistics on the pay of men and women in this country. And when they factor out all the reasons that could legitimately provide a difference in pay between men and women, a substantial amount is still left, which is caused by discrimination.
Mm-hmm. And we suffer discrimination through many, many ways. Unfortunately, discrimination is something I feel that is taught. I feel that it is taught to be acceptable in certain circles in certain ways. And
who do you think teaches that discrimination is acceptable?
I think society. If I want to get broad, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, we all discriminate in many different ways when it comes to work, whether it is in nepotism, the cliche, the old, you know, old boys network, things like that. And we make it difficult in society for anyone who says this is not right by usually rewarding them in some way to keep going with it, just to make it easier and better. And someone gets left out for whatever that reason is, whether it's because they're male or female, whether it's because of the way they look, the way they sound. You know, there doesn't seem to be an easy answer to all this.
Well, some of the things you mentioned while they are invidious discrimination, mm-hmm. are not barred by law.
Correct.
But the law today prohibits discrimination in employment based on race, color, religion, sex, national origin, physical or mental disability, and age.
Mm-hmm.
And that is simply unlawful in this country if you're a covered employer or employment agency or labor union. So our society as a whole, if it evidences what it cares about in the laws that are passed, finds those types of discrimination impermissible in this country. That only started in the mid-1960s.
All right. I'm speaking right now with Sonia Pressman Fuentes, and she's going to be the recipient of the Florida Glass Ceiling Award coming up in April. And right now we're essentially talking about the glass ceiling, what women face, and discrimination in today's workforce. And I wholeheartedly agree with you. We've had laws in place for decades now that fight against discrimination. But I think Lilly Ledbetter is the perfect example of why it's not always working. Here is a woman, an educated woman who rose through the ranks and went for and was working within the time that those laws were in place, and yet she was still discriminated against. And it wasn't until she became educated about her situation that she was able to do anything about it. I mean, if we don't put into practice those laws in her day-to-day life, they don't really mean much except for offering her a recourse.
You're exactly right, but Lilly Ledbetter, as a matter of fact, is a perfect example of how it is working.
Yes. It just took her several decades. And she could not, and you may know more than I about this. The only thing that she was able to do is change that loophole. But she didn't get any monetary compensation or dispensation for this, did she?
I remember that. She did not benefit herself from it. And I forget the details of that, but you're correct about that. But you also made another interesting point. Mm-hmm. Laws are not self-executing.
Yes.
In order for a law to work, at least the laws that I'm most familiar with in the non-discrimination area, in order for those laws to work, somebody has to go and file a complaint.
Correct. And somebody has to know that there are alternatives or options. And
correct.
That's why I think, number one, receiving this award is important, because it gives you and I the opportunity to talk about something that many young women today, if their lives weren't affected by it through their parents or through family members, they're going to grow up not realizing that these options are there for them.
This is true.
So, when you found out that you were the recipient, did they indicate? And maybe we should take a step back and talk about your background and experience before we go on.
Okay.
So, what is it that brought you to this day? You mentioned that you were an attorney in Washington.
I was an attorney mostly in Washington, D.C., but also in Stamford, Connecticut, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Los Angeles,
and what kind
Cleveland,
of,
Ohio.
What kind of law did you practice?
Well, my first job was with the United States Department Office of Alien Property, which no longer exists, which dealt with claims under the Trading with the Enemy Act. And then I joined the National Labor Relations Board and got an education in labor law. Mm-hmm. And then I switched to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which got me into this whole field of anti-discrimination. And my final government job was with the HUD, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. But I also worked with two large corporations, GTE Service Corporation and TRW Inc.
Wow. So you're actually, this glass ceiling award is it seems like it was actually carved out for someone exactly like you.
Well, I don't know that that's true. It's been around for decades.
I know, which is why I question, they should have been knocking on your door earlier, because everything that you do helps level the playing field for all people involved, not just women.
That's true, but that's what I've been doing.
And all right, so let's bring us current to date, because I heard that you were retired, but I have a sneaking suspicion that retirement is just a word in your book.
Well, I am retired from the practice of law, mm-hmm. but I'm not retired from living or being an activist.
And what are you an activist with?
Well, here in first of all, I continue to be very active in the women's rights movement. Mm-hmm. I'm connected to the people I've been connected to for decades, and younger people, and I email people constantly. So that's one way I remain active. I'm involved with an organization called the Veteran Feminists of America. I'm involved with NOW. Locally, I am involved with Unidos NOW, mm-hmm. an organization devoted to improving the status of Hispanics in the Sarasota community. I'm on the program committee of my congregation, the Congregation for Humanistic Judaism. I work with Laura Gelke and Luz Corquera on maternal health care.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a conference on maternal health care, Laura and I, back in on the 1st of November 2009. We issued at that time a resource guide on resources available for families in connection with pregnancy and childbirth. And we are in the process of upgrading that, and we would like to have it translated into Spanish and to issue that.
I know both of those women, and they are wonderful women. They do amazing things in the community, and it does not surprise me that the three of you have actually hooked up. In fact, Unidos Now is also an organization that I'm very familiar with, all the fine representatives of that organization. What prompted you to get involved with them?
Well, they were having an opening of their new offices in the Schoenbaum Glasser Center. Uh-huh. And Manuel Chipote, I hope I have his last name right, I think so, invited me to attend. We had met some years earlier, the former mayor of Sarasota.
Kelly Kirshner?
No.
Okay.
Because
I know he's
that,
involved in
Unidos
Now.
Luann Palmer.
Oh, Luann Palmer, sure.
Was giving a... This is dropping.
Okay.
Was giving a talk at I think, the Kovernick House.
Yes.
About growing up in Sarasota. And I attended that, and Manuel had been friendly with Luann, and so he attended that. And we met at that time, and I would email him once in a while. Well, anyway, he invited me to this opening of the new Unidos Now office, and I went there, and he was just very solicitous of me and very nice to me. And then we went and had lunch at after that program, lunch or dinner. I guess we had dinner at the Encanto restaurant, a new Peruvian restaurant in town. And Manuel is from Peru. Mm-hmm. Peru. So after that, I began to ask Manuel and the current executive director, since Kelly Kirshner left, whose name is Frankie Soriano, I asked them if there was any way I could be helpful to them. And what worked out was that I began to introduce them to the leaders of organizations in town whom I knew and with whom they began building bridges so that they could communicate with these organizations, work together, learn from them, and that kind of thing. So I introduced them to John McCarthy of Scope, the American Jewish Committee, Laura Gilkey, mm-hmm. and people like that with whom they're now working.
Well, I was there. I've been following them since the inception of Unidos Now a couple of years ago. And even last night, while I wasn't able to attend an event that they had, it was fun to watch them on Facebook and see how that group has grown. And one thing that I've noticed, whether it's women like we spoke of, our Hispanic community, even nursing mothers, there's so much commonality with the same issues and frustrations that they face every day that it's actually wonderful that, you know, through you, you've connected all of them, because I could imagine what kind of support they must offer each other.
Well, a friend of mine, the late Dr. Ida Davidoff, used to call me a kochleffel.
Okay.
And do you know what that means?
I want you to explain it.
It's either a Yiddish or a German word for the wooden spoon that you use when you're cooking something like a stew in a pot and you mix it up. And that's what I like to do. I like to use my networking and my connections to accomplish things and introduce people to each other.
Well, that's terrific. All right, we're going to explore a little bit more of that and also some of the other things that you're involved in town as well. When we come back after these messages, I want to let everybody know that you're listening to the Nylon Report, and I am speaking with Sonia Pressman Fuentes, and she's about to receive, actually next month, I believe it is, to the Florida Glass Ceiling Award. It's a wonderful organization, and it's a wonderful award, and she's given us a great opportunity to actually talk about all these issues that we're dealing with, not only on a national level, but also on a local level. We're going to continue this conversation when we come back from the break, but I want to remind you that there's lots of ways that you can listen to WSRQ Radio. Not only can you listen to us in the car, you can also listen to us online at sarasotatalkradio.com, where you can listen live through our live stream, or you can listen through our smartphone app. And if you have a Google Android or any kind of Android, you can go ahead into the Google Store and type in WSRQ Radio and download our app, so you can take us anywhere in the world with you. And I'm happy you're joining us, and we'll be right back after these messages, continuing on with our conversation with Sonia Pressman Fuentes, all on the Nylon Report. everyone. You're listening to the Nylon Report on WSRQ Radio, where I'm here every day at 5 o'clock. We're talking with Sonia Pressman Fuentes. I'm sorry, I've been butchering her name this whole show, and so now I've been practicing. And she is going to be the recipient of the Florida Glass Ceiling Award next April. It's a very prestigious award, and I have to say it's given to a very prestigious woman who's sitting here with me, and I want to welcome you back to our show.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
It's nice to be, you know, I'm surprised with all the people that we know in common and all the circles that we travel in that we've never met before. So I'm grateful for this opportunity. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about as I'm looking through my notes is there's a movie called Feminist, Stories from Women's Liberation. And I know that you're involved in that. Do you want to talk about that?
I certainly do. There's a California filmmaker named Jennifer Lee, and she's been working on this film for 8 years now. And she interviewed me twice for it 8 years ago, and I've been in touch with her ever since. I recommended some people she could interview for the film and told her how to locate them, and she traveled all around the country, initially for most of the time on her own money, and interviewed these people. And it's a film, and I haven't seen it yet, but it's a film primarily about the second wave of the women's movement, which started in the early mid-60s, mm-hmm. went on in the mid-70s, and that kind of thing. And it will have its first film festival showing on March 24th at the L.A. International Women's Film Festival. And I'm very excited about that. And I'm constantly in touch with Jenny. And I am hoping that after this initial film festival showing that we can get it shown in Sarasota and all across the country.
That would be absolutely wonderful. Can we talk a little bit about the feminist movement? Because one of the things that I've observed, especially in the past year or so, there has been an incredible backlash from conservative women who basically have blamed, and we've seen this all throughout the decades, the entire feminist movement and the pressure and emphasis that is put on women in ways that not all women agree with. I'm a child of the 60s. I saw firsthand the difference between my mother, who went from being a woman of the 50s to a woman of the 60s and 70s. It greatly impacted my life. Do you think that feminism has changed, or is it still the core of what it is and necessary?
I'm sure that feminism has changed because it changes with the decades and it changes with new women coming aboard. But from my vantage point, the main goal it started with, has had, will have, is to make women equal partners in our society, equal on all levels and in all areas.
See, I look at it as, and I still feel this is true, whether it's at the tip of our conversation or just something embedded back in our memory, it gives us a choice. I don't think feminism, for the most part, was ever to put down a woman who chose to be a homemaker, who chose to take a position, of what some people would consider a subservient position. I just think it gave women the education that said you don't have to choose that if you're not wanting to, or you do have the ability to go beyond that if you so choose.
I think you're right. It's about options and choice. And until the women's movement came along in the mid-60s, women didn't have a choice, basically. They were told that their job was to become a wife and mother. And she was basically to be confined to the home. She might work if her husband couldn't support the family or if family finances required it. But she was only supposed to work for a short time until her husband got on his feet. And she was not supposed to work in significant, meaningful occupations. She could be a sales clerk, a typist, a secretary. I myself, after college, began work as a secretary. lower level jobs. She was basically not to be outspoken, not to present opinions on significant issues, and not to be a player in the events of her time.
And I agree with you. I think of my own mother, who was a, she actually worked for Bell Telephone, and she had risen in the union to be a shop steward and so forth and so on. Then she got married and became pregnant with me, and it was expected, in which she complied, to actually quit the job and go home and raise kids. And she, what, it wasn't until her 30s, which is in, put her in the mid 70s, that she did realize that there were other options. She was here in Sarasota, where she went to Ringling College, knocked on their door as a 33-year-old and said, I want to earn a college degree. And they told her no. They told her, you're too old. They told her, you have kids at home. I was, I think, 7 or 8 at the time. And they said, your place is in the home. And my mom turned around and said, I don't care what you say. I'm going to show up for class and I'll bring my own chair and I'll do my folding chair every day until you admit me to the school. And, you know, she did. It took him a week to finally say, OK, we'll admit you. And what an impression that made on me, because I saw my mom growing up and that evolution and that light that went on that said, you know, her life didn't stop once she fulfilled her duties.
Good for her. That's a wonderful story.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a wonderful story. So to bring it back to today, and when you now have a lot of conservative women who are saying that feminism has done them wrong or is not the way to go, how do you respond?
Well, you've twice mentioned conservative women. Mm-hmm. So let me say, first of all, that the last election was won by Barack Obama.
Yeah, yeah.
It was not won by George Romney and Paul Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
So this country indicated that it wants a progressive agenda. And hopefully that's the one that President Obama will follow in and is following in his second term.
Mm-hmm.
I am the last person that you want to speak to about conservative women because I'm a liberal woman. I've been a liberal all my life. And I cannot explain to you how progressive women, conservative women think or what they want.
I've actually interviewed a few of them and their groups on the air, and that's why I bring it up, because I think to myself, you know, I just don't think they totally understand the movement and the whole idea behind it and why it was so important and why it still is important. But let's bring it on now. You have an amazing record. What are things on your list for the future?
Well, I am going to be giving a talk. It's hard for me to remember everything that's on my agenda, but I'm going to be giving a talk. I think it's April 6th. I'm giving a talk at the Congregation for Humanistic Judaism on my trip to my birthplace, Germany. It was my second trip returning to Germany in September 2011. I'll be giving a talk on that. On April 14th, I'll be giving a talk, a brief talk, at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Sarasota about the women's rights movement. I'll just be speaking for about 10 minutes to some kind of a forum group there, and then we'll have a discussion. On April 21st, I'll be giving a 10-minute talk at the Jewish Museum of Florida in connection with the Glass Ceiling Award. June, you want me to keep going?
No, actually, for those listeners who have just tuned in, I want to let them know that I'm speaking with Sonia Pressman Fuentes, and we're talking about her experience and the fact that she's about to receive the Glass Ceiling Award from it's the Florida Jewish Federation. Is that the organization?
No, the Jewish Museum of Florida in
okay.
Miami Beach.
Terrific. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk to you about you've written a book.
Yes.
And the book is called Eat First. You don't know what they'll give you. So when we come back, we're going to find out what that book is about. It's her autobiography. You're listening to The Nylon Report on WSRQ Radio.
If you live the life you please, well, it's all. sit around and wait for the phone to ring.
There's no combination of words I could put on.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to the Nylon Report. My name's Susan Nylon in the studio, WSRQ Radio. I want to let you know that tomorrow I'm going to be interviewing Adam Miller. He's the owner of Filter Environmental Kitchen Solutions, a company doing some fascinating and innovative work to help the county go green. In particular, I believe he's taking cooking oil and turning it into gasoline, and we're going to talk to him about how he's doing that. And also a little bit into the segment, we're going to be talking with Kirsten Sponseller. She's going to join us tomorrow to talk about the picks, events, and highlights that are going to help you enjoy your weekend in Sarasota. Right now, I'm speaking with Sonia Pressman Fuentes, and we're talking about not only her opportunity of receiving the Glass Ceiling Award, but she's also got a book out that we talked about right before the break called Eat First, You Don't Know What They'll Give You. And it's a memoir about her experience of her family fleeing Berlin in 1933. Is that correct?
That's when we left.
Okay. Do you want to go into a little bit about what that book is?
Sure. Well, the book also has a subtitle. It's called Eat First, You Don't Know What They'll Give You, The Adventures of an Immigrant Family and Their Feminist Daughter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a great title.
And I'm the feminist daughter. If you'd like to ask me something specific, I'd be happy to.
Okay, so what inspired you to write this book?
Well, I retired from my job as an attorney with the federal government in 1993. And then I went to a year and a half where I was depressed and unhappy and wondering what I was going to do with the rest of my life, because a basic part of my life had been spent in getting an education and becoming an attorney and moving up in my career. And all of a sudden that ended. And it was a shock. I went to a wonderful retirement party at HUD where I worked. And then I came home and I said, what now?
Mm-hmm.
So I tried different things. I thought about working again full time. I thought about working part time. I thought about traveling. I thought about volunteer work. I tried a number of these things and I wasn't really getting anywhere. And meanwhile, all along, people had been telling me that I needed to write a book, but I didn't want to write a book because it's a lot of work and a lot of research and isolating. And so I didn't do anything about it. And then I decided I'd look into it. And I spent about a year or so trying to get a co-author who was experienced in writing a book to work with me. And nothing came of that. And then I met a woman.
How did you decide to write a book about your family? And what was it about their experience that said, this is something I need to put down on paper?
Well, my parents and brother and I were Holocaust survivors. We were living in Germany and had to flee because of Hitler and fled for a while to Antwerp, Belgium. And then in 1934 came to the United States. And as you've already mentioned, I then became a founder of the second wave of the women's movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in on the ground floor of the legal revolution and women's rights. And I thought there was a story there, and so did lots of other people.
So this book, when has it come out?
It came out November 24th, 1999. And it's available in hardcover, softcover, and for Kindle.
Okay, great. And when you published the book, what was the reception that you received? And were you able to tour with the book?
It has really totally changed my life. People are very impressed when they learn that you have written a book. And I don't think it matters whether it's a good book or what it's about. People are just impressed with authors.
Mm-hmm.
And so from the minute that book was published, I began... Well, I'd already been speaking for the EEOC. I've spoken all over the United States and all over the world. I used to speak for the United States Information Agency all over the world. But from the time I published the book, the recognition has just been incredible.
And one of the things that I see here is that you've also been mentoring a young feminist activist and writer, 17-year-old Talia Weisberg of New York City.
Exactly, right.
Do you want to talk about how that came about?
Well, Talia, at the time she first contacted me, was about 16, I think. And she's a feminist. She's also a modern Orthodox. And it isn't easy to combine those two.
Yeah.
But she's apparently able to do it. And she contacted me. She wanted to interview me in connection with something she was writing and had come across me on the internet. And we have been communicating with each other, working together on projects, and are constantly in touch.
Well, that's terrific. I'm speaking with Sonia Pressman Fuentes, and the glass ceiling award. Let's take it back to that, since we're wrapping up our time together. What do you hope to accomplish with that? Will you be able to speak on that award? Will you be able to hopefully introduce other women to the possibilities?
Well, a friend of mine who's, I'm very thrilled to say, flying out from California to attend the program, suggested that I'm going to be speaking for 10 minutes there because I'm one of five women being recognized. And she said that would be a way to remind young women today of what the world was like before the 1960s, the changes that have occurred since then, which are nothing short of breathtaking, and the problems that remain for us to solve in the future and for the new generations to solve in the future.
Well, I'm very excited, and I hope to follow you along in many years of your work. Leaving here, if somebody's listening and they have an opportunity that they want to reach out to you, is there a way to do so since you're a Sarasota resident?
People can reach out to me whether they live in Sarasota or anywhere in the world. I'm an email addict, and my email address is S as in Sam, P as in Peter, my last name Fuentes, which is Fuentes at Comcast.net.
All right, Sonia Pressman Fuentes, I appreciate that you coming in today, and I really enjoyed speaking with you. I hope to be able to do it again in the future.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here, and I hope to continue our acquaintanceship.
All right. Thank you very much.